Hello, lovers. Welcome to Heart, the Living Spirit Fully podcast. I am your host, Paul Galoro, and in this podcast, I have heart-centered conversations with amazing people that I love. Today's guest is Michelle Doyle, and I'm just so blessed to know her. Michelle Doyle is, first of all, she's a Leo like me. That's one thing that we connect on. And she's just such an amazing storyteller. Whenever she speaks, it's no wonder that she is a very amazing, successful public speaker. She has done everything from teaching yoga to corporate public speaking to stand-up comedy. And you'll see why in our conversation today. Now, we just kept on talking and talking and talking, and there's just so much to cover, and I think she has a lot of amazing insights to share. So I couldn't cut down this conversation to under an hour, so you're going to see it in two parts. Today is part one of my conversation with Michelle Doyle. And I am so honored for today's guest. Michelle Doyle and I met, I don't remember the year, but I remember the time and the place. It was when I was a coordinator for mind-body programming at a gym. And we were opening a hot yoga studio and looking for new teachers. And in walks Michelle. And I'll never forget, girl, I don't know if you remember this day, but you took me through a quick little class. But that was like 5 or 10 minutes. The rest of the time was just us connecting. We were like two squirrel friends just having a good time. And it was just like love ever since. So I'm so excited. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm awesome. I'm very excited. I'm always happy to talk to you. It just, I've never done it in such a platform before. So thank you for being my first, Paul.
Oh, well, thank you for allowing me to be your first.
You're welcome.
So, okay, we've had some like pretty good times together. And one of the highlights for me was going to see Lisa Loeb.
Oh, gosh.
Was that last year? That was last year, right?
That was last year. And yes, shall I tell the story?
Yes, you're welcome to, but do you want to tell it now or do you want to like get into it later?
Let's tell
it later. Yeah. You know what I just want to talk about? First of all, how you like got us front row. You were like buttering up those ladies that you could have potentially possibly worked with. And just between us squirrel friends, I think you fabricated that entire story. I don't believe you worked there. I don't believe you remember them. I'm totally kidding.
I was going to say that was
The way you worked those women, it was amazing that they like let us right in the front. And then they were like, okay, go. And we got right front row. Lisa Loeb was literally like, she spit on us at one point.
She needs to listen to this, but it's so true. What are the odds that the two women working the doors were quite literally people that I worked with? I'm doing the math in my head now, over 20 years ago. Wow. Over 20 years ago. And so, well, who would have known that it would have got you and I front row center, baby, right? But that was awesome.
Yeah, that was a fun show. I enjoyed it. There was like maybe 150 of us, not even. It was so intimate. I love experiences like that.
But the thing is, that's what I love about Lisa Loeb. And I said this to her, I think, when we met her. I said, you know, it's the musicianship. Like, she's done this for so many years, but she enjoys it, and you can tell. And I think that it's not true with just someone who's a musician, but anybody. If they care about what they're doing, if they're putting themselves into it, I often think it's almost like when you see a dancer. You can see a dancer that has been technically trained and, you know, is right on point. But when they allow, given, you know, their heart to shine through, their love, their passion, you can sense it. You can see it. You can feel it. It's visceral, right?
Yes.
And I think that's the thing is, you know, she's just sitting up there on like with her guitar and her bottle of water and is just letting us go for the ride with her. And she's having a great time. And yeah, there we go. Lisa Loeb, life lessons from Lisa Loeb.
Life lessons from Lisa Loeb. Exactly. So my love, I am so honored and excited that you're here. I cannot wait to see where this conversation takes us. But tell me, how is your heart?
Wow, what an odd question in this time, in the time of quarantining and isolation. And but to answer honestly, this is the first time in, I think, my entire, I was going to say my adult life, but maybe in my entire, well, in my entire life where for so my adult life, I'll say, is everything I've done work-wise, especially for the last like over 10 years, has involved speaking to groups of people. It's involved the energy of groups of people where it's, you know, giving and receiving, it's reciprocal, it flows. And so for all of that to abruptly stop, right, was just kind of like, as much as I love, you know, I love quiet, I, you know, it's awesome, but it just was like, wow, like I feel like a ghost of myself almost. Does that make sense? It's because it's like I'm not
Interesting.
being seen. I'm not really, you know, and being heard, obviously, you know, you and I are speaking, but it's different than having you right in front of my face and us having a big hug and giggling and all this stuff, right? So I think my heart is learning some good lessons. I'm putting a positive spin on it because I find that being an optimistic realist makes life a little more palatable in really tough times. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So I think the practice of receiving is a big thing for me right now. You know how I think this kind of segues into, you know how people talk about, you know, probably the abundance and inviting things into your life, whether it is love or opportunity, or I think the thing is they're already around, but it's our blockages to receiving them that really get in the way. Does that make sense? You and Asada talked about this on your other podcast, but I'm just going to speak and do my thing. No, but that's pretty much how I see it is. Right now, I'm practicing removing the obstacles because it's all there, right? So I think my heart right now is just kind of in a period of learning, but also nourishing, nurturing, openness. Letting things in, as you and I spoke, because again, being candid, I'm used to having, you know, one-on-one conversations and, you know, and even small intimate groups, but it's almost, even with this, it's like, you know what? It's just like where that's happening, but just a bunch of people are going to listen in on it. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, it's something that you just said made me think of something that you told me just earlier before we started this recording, where you said this has been a time for you to nurture and nourish your heart. And I love that, and that's very much in alignment with what your name means. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's well, my mother, when I was born, she didn't have a name really picked out. And she was going through names, and as soon as she saw Michelle, well, it hit the mark on two levels. One, it was French. And my mother loved things that were French. My mother's Irish. So of course she loved things that were French. So she thought, oh, Michelle. But when she saw that it meant woman of God, that was it. She said, that's what, so she, that was the reason she chose the name.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I love that meaning woman of God. When I think of woman of God, I think of like the divine mother, that nurturing, nourishing. And for me, that's really what the message of COVID has been. From that moment that we were told to shelter in place, to, you know, social distance, et cetera, physical distance, all of that stuff. To me, I saw this as an opportunity. We keep on hearing, you know, the future is female, the future is female. And I think of that not so much as the female gender, but the feminine aspect, which is that nurturing, that introspective aspect of ourselves. And so having sort of come out of a 2 year period of a lot of that, it was almost natural for me to just sink into that. And so it was interesting even too when you said that it, like you're out in the open in the public all the time. So you were in that, and then all of a sudden it was just like, that's not there anymore. Now it's internal.
And it wasn't necessarily a bad thing, right? Because it's a great, you know, like writing is such a huge passion for me. And what a beautiful opportunity to focus on writing, right? To have that space and to, as someone who loves silence, and again, you know, like any, like everyone, you know, we all have lives and work and that sort of thing, but there's a constant movement and live like this, you know, in Toronto, with TTC, there's noise, noise, noise. And then we had that period of silence that was kind of foreign to me in a lot of ways. And I was like, oh, this is fantastic. So it's seeing almost the beauty in the midst of what could be seen as ugliness.
Yeah.
You know, but not really. But to kind of stay on this topic, I'm curious, what does Paul mean?
Small. It means little. That's what baby books tell me. Now, I don't know if there is another meaning behind that, but
I'm going to research that when we get off.
Please do.
Because I'm always curious, because Paul is all, you know, seen as such a, you know, growing up in, you know, the biblical attachment or what have you, but
yeah,
I've never met a Paul that's been not a nice person. So I hope I'm not tempting the universe with that. Don't send any of them into my life. Thank you very much.
There you go. Just tell the universe, not interested.
No,
I'll take
you.
The nice ones only.
I'll keep this Paul. This one's fine for me.
I love you. Thank you. Okay. You spend a lot of time writing. What has been, because I know you have a beautiful way with words and you're just hysterical just in conversation. So I'm so excited to like, will you be sharing any of the stuff that you're writing or that you have written? Are you going to be putting that out into the world?
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is I spent 4 years writing a book. And I think when I first set out to write it, I was just like, oh, you know, I had this really awesome experience, but it was also a really tragic experience and it could have ended in like many other not so nice ways, but it had a kind of, well, I'm here now and having this conversation, so it ended all right. And so I thought it would make a good story. So I started writing it and as time progressed, I realized that I was writing that story for me because it made me have to go a lot deeper into areas that I've avoided out of, whether it's out of convenience, out of safety, or having to actually find out answers to questions I never really wanted to ask, right? Because we all, I think we have that self that we project to other people. And I think I'll reference, again, you and Asada had a conversation about almost like defense mechanisms that you create to protect from hurt, right? And I did that, with funny enough, humor. I would deflect with humor and what have you. But I wanted to find out more of, okay, well, why do I have this constant aversion to certain situations or certain people, or what is it that I'm avoiding? Right. And so with writing that story and having to go into really painful memories about childhood and my teenage years, and it wasn't about the story, it's what led up to that story happening in the first place. Right.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Totally.
Oops, I did it again. Thanks, Britt.
I love that. I'm sure that it's in your book, but are you able to share an example of that?
Of course.
Are you
open
to?
Yeah. An example of like some of the hurt stuff that came up. Okay.
And like the things leading up to it that.
Okay. Yeah, for sure. So, well, before all, obviously teaching yoga and all that, years ago I was in marketing. And when I was younger, I was driven, it kind of kicked in when I was in my early teens, around 14, 15, this drive to succeed, this drive to be a powerful businesswoman, right? I'm doing
so you can have a business.
Say it, please say it.
Say it, because you wanted to have the business women special.
Yes. Okay, after this, let's go for a businesswoman special. All right. Yeah. Oh, that was awesome. Okay. So I had this drive to be this powerful businesswoman, having businesswoman specials. Oh gosh, this is awesome. Anyway, and something just set in. I was, you know, even as a teenager working several jobs. And so I, you know, years later, when I got to a certain level in my early career that was still growing, you know, you get a taste of, okay, well, yeah, this, yeah, okay, well, this is a nice title. Oh, this is a nice area to live. Oh, I like having this balance in my checkbook. And I was like, but why, is this what success is supposed to feel like? Is this what being powerful is supposed to feel like? Even on a very small, of course, level, but I just kind of felt this emptiness. And that's where I was like, okay, well, what, and as I was writing the story, which is kind of like, you know, if we kind of go a little deeper, you know, my father had a hidden drug problem that, as someone who was very big on just perception, how we were perceived, right? Because my mom and I, right? It was like how we were perceived. The blanket or the dump truck of shame that, you know, having a drug addict father gave me kind of put me into this whole new area of just defensiveness and rebellion and just, okay. So I wasn't chasing that to, because I loved the idea of, I want to, you know, promote products on the highest level and have a really nice office. It was more like, I will be respected. I will be powerful because I have no power in this situation. Right. So that was just one little fire. In the spirit of transparency, it's like, why was I so judgmental? I went through a period of that as well. When I say a period, it makes it sound like a teenage phase, when it kind of lasted, you know, it's like, that's wrong, that's wrong. And it was almost like this, trying to think of Mrs. Garrett on a really bad day, but in your 20s. Now, if anyone hasn't watched The Facts of Life, that's not going to make a blade of sense. But watch one episode. The one where Tootie ends up going to see Jermaine Jackson. Yeah, you'll see Mrs. Garrett at her finest there. Girls! Girls! But it was like almost like a joke, because it was like I was trying to be this idealized, you know, rule follower and being the good person, being the antithesis of what my father was. And then it kind of hit me all at once that everything that I was trying to avoid hit me all at once, right? And this also involves, you know, okay, being transparent, growing up with a religious family and knowing that I was different, right? But hearing the way gay people were spoken about, hearing, and again, not from necessarily my own family, but people in church, how they spoke about gay people, like with absolute disgust, right? Mm-hmm. And again, so it was more of a construct. Okay, how can I be this person who is liked? And I think I think anyone listening to this who has ever been bullied as a child will understand. Sometimes it's just, okay, what can I do to get through this day without someone tormenting me? That's, and you know, this coming from the kid who I used to at like recess, go into the like the bathroom that no one ever used. And I'd stand on the toilet seat with the door locked so no one knew I was there. And I was like 9 and 10, right? So, right? But we've all, that's a thing. So having that in my, I didn't realize, okay, wow, that stuff really did affect me. But it came out in very different ways when I was an adult. And that was just one of them. Right. Mm-hmm. It was just how I created this construct of what is palatable for people. What will give them the opposite of disgust. Right. Wow. And yeah, and kind of realizing there's no one way. It doesn't have to be just one particular way. And I think, you know, I'm always learning. It's not like I figured it out and okay, close the books on that one. Again, that's right. What I loved about writing is it's basically I was taking the thoughts out of my head, the feelings, and just putting them on paper. And it was like, wow, it's giving them a place to go. Mm-hmm. And writing gave my deep, deep shame a place to go. And writing it, I thought, oh, this would be, I think there's this kind of, not a stigma, but it's like a perception that, oh, you know, writing it, you know, you're sitting on a cafe in Paris, wearing your sunglasses and just musing and writing beautiful poetry. And it's like some of the best writing comes from the worst pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, like that's, I was grateful to have great, I did classes at U of T for creative writing and met some awesome people, which, Paul, I don't think you know that. I don't think you know this, but in a way, my writing, like learning about writing, the craft of writing, you had something inadvertently to do with it. Do you
Me?
Remember? Yes. Yes, you. Years ago, years and years ago, you had said, Michelle, you sent me a text. I met this person. She was in the corporate world and she wants to go and do what you did and take a trip to India. And I can kind of touch on that. I'll touch on it now and then I'll come back to this story. By the way, for anyone listening, this is how Paul and I speak. Yeah. We need to have like a little bell that every time we change topics, it's like, ding, okay. And then
new topic.
Ding, and then we'll come back. But anyway, the whole gist of leading up to that point of, okay, here I am in my career, here I am in my life. One of the, I guess the funny parts is, it's also kind of sad, is that, you know, I said, that's it. I'm going to go back to men. Women are too complicated. And then I met someone who just blew my mind and heart out of the water and turned everything, all my plans upside down, right? And so finally, little by little, all the areas of my life started to collapse. And I said, I just need to go somewhere where I don't matter, where what I do doesn't matter, where nobody knows me, and where I can just be. And so for that, that's why I ended up just going with, I always say, a backpack full of clean underwear, some blank journals, and, you know, an emergency medical kit, ratty pajamas, and I went to India, right?
Wow.
So when you said that you met someone who wanted to, who didn't know me from a hole in the wall, but she, same thing, she was like, okay, there's something not right. I want to go to India. I'm not too sure where to start. And you said, she's a lovely person. Here, get in touch with her. You remember this? Is this ringing a bell?
I don't, but it sounds like a really nice thing to do.
Boy, Paul, I'm glad we never dated or had a one-night stand. You would have just broken my heart.
But I'm sorry. Just sidebar, I have the worst memory. Like, people will tell me, oh, remember when you did this? I'm like, I don't, but that sounds like a really nice thing. Who is that guy? Mm-hmm. And so it surprises me when I hear stories like this. I'm like, oh, well, okay, so you are a nice person.
Yeah. So, well, the funny thing is I ended up meeting her and giving her a lift somewhere, because any friend of yours is a friend of mine. So, and then she was talking about someone she had studied with. Anyways, it ended up being someone who's a writing teacher who was recommended to me from someone. Now, that just sounded like a chess move, didn't it? That's as clear as mud. So long story short, when I was thinking about doing this writing course, this woman who I met through you suggested the teacher that was recommended to me. She had met her. And I was just like, what are the odds? So you, in a way, had a role to play.
Oh, wow. Way.
That sounds like a poem. That's where my writing journey started.
Well, that's amazing.
Learning, yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So thank you.
That. Oh my gosh, you're welcome. It's so funny because I'm sure, like, again, I don't remember this. And whenever something is like a meant to be situation, I don't remember because I'm not acting from me. I'm just like, I'm sure I was having a conversation with her and something said, connect her with Michelle. And so I just did. And then it's up to the universe. And I just do what I'm asked to do. And
that's like Lisa Loeb.
Exactly.
Ready? Stay tuned, folks. No.
So yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I love that story. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. There's so many places that I want to go with what you just said.
Sure.
One of the questions that I do want to ask you though, because this is something that we sort of share, is this idea where like we were, you know, in our world, top of the whatever we were in our world, and then both just decided, okay, I gotta get out.
Yeah.
You went to India. I closed my studio. I've talked about this before. I just went to Italy and then came back with all of this, like, just a it's interesting. I was speaking to someone about it earlier today. She asked me about my time. She goes, did you feel like you ran away? Like you were running away? Do you feel the same? Like, what was going on with that? And to be honest, as I reflect, I realized I was running away. I was just like, everything's shit here. I'm not happy. I'm doing all the things I thought I'm supposed to be doing, and I'm not happy. I'm just gonna, obviously it's this place because I'm usually happy. So then I leave, I go to Italy. Yes, I have a wonderful time, but then the shit that I left behind started to creep up, not in the same way and with the people that I had here, but in different ways. And that's when you start to realize, oh, that saying, wherever you go, there you are. So it was like, I ran so far away. And I get to Italy and it just caught up with me. Between Aperol Spritz and Italian men, all of that stuff came back up. And then I came back and I had to deal with it.
Oh yeah.
And
Oh.
so what was your, how long were you in India?
It was 1 month, but it still blows my mind how 1 month changed my life so drastically.
And can we just talk about how India is like a time vortex? I was
Oh
there
yeah.
for like 2 weeks and it felt like I was there for years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just how much growth
Oh yeah.
happens.
And especially depends on where you go to, right? Especially if you're not in the city and you're in it's not for the faint of heart. Like, there's people I know, it's like you can go and sit behind, look at it through windows, right? And be hidden almost, or be protected. It's like, oh no. It's one of those places that it will touch you if you let it. But I often say though, Paul, like, and this is important because I think this is the thing that's, I don't want to say I hate, but what's challenging is that stigma of, oh, white woman doesn't like her life, so she just goes to India, right? And the thing is, I did this before Eat, Pray, Love, but that doesn't matter because there's still that attachment, there's still that.
Totally.
And in all fairness, and not to go, I think what's important is not, because Paul, people hear what you did, people hear what I did, and they're, oh, that sounds great. But I don't want to create some illusion that I was sitting on like Scrooge McDuck-like money. I had student loans, I had debt, but it was one of those things that, and I love how you said about, I need an adventure. That's a great way of saying I just need to escape from this maelstrom that is my life. You know what I mean? So I think that's what, looking back now, that's totally what it was. And the thing is, it's yeah, I can put myself in a different environment, but I had to take my heart with me and I had to take my mind with me. And it was very frustrating because again, when I came back, it was like, oh no. I've learned all these lessons, or at least the seeds of them have been planted. Because and I'll ask you, did you get, it's not like, I think there's this whole misconception that you go and, oh, I'm going to become enlightened. That's such BS,
No,
right? I think
it's
the
far
thing
from
is, I
that.
think at least this is, I'll put it in this analogy. For me, it was like, you go, it's like having your soil so cultivated, like your heart being so raw, your mind just being so lost because it's like, okay, I'm doing everything right, but one plus one is not equaling two here. And so you go and then you are in that state, so you're more open to receiving these lessons that you could not even imagine receiving. And then you come back and try to reinsert this new self into your old life. And it honestly felt like an episode of The Twilight Zone. And I will never forget going in on my very, when I came back and went back to work, I walked in and I thought I was going to have a panic attack. And everything just felt so organized. And I sat down. And as soon as I got in, I got a call from our office manager at the time. And I just started, she's like, how are you? That was it. I was like, well, I don't know where I belong. I don't know. And I didn't. I felt like I looked in the mirror. I was like, I have no idea who this person was. And I think I was in that fine space between what I was seeing, what I had created, knowing why I had created it, or at least having an idea that it was coming from a place of pain and want and desire and, you know, and all, you know, I just want to be accepted for me, but not knowing exactly how to move from the, how do you move from that? Right. So I feel that ever since then, so since I was 30, it's more, it's not about, oh, I'm discovering, I'm unlearning. I am unlearning. I've spent the last, like ever since then, I've spent the time unlearning. And I think when you spend most of your life, and I remember there was this thing going around social media for a while. Someone did a really awesome post about, I think when you grow up as a gay person, whether you're closeted or not, but you spend so many years trying to compensate being, you know, an acceptable, you know, to say the right thing and be palatable for other people. Right. I know I'm totally clearing their words here, but that now, once you discover that, you're now starting to learn how to actually express who you truly are. Mm-hmm. Right. Who am I actually, or what parts of my persona have I constructed or molded to suit you? So you'll say, oh yeah, you're not a bad person after all. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And even with things like humor and stuff, like letting your real humor out and, you know, like it's pretty, I don't know. I don't want to overuse the word cathartic. I wouldn't say it's cathartic, but it's almost, there's something liberating about it. Of it's like, yeah, this is who I am. And gosh, I forgot for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And even what's going on in the world right now, like even seeing like certain friends who are non-binary and embracing and saying, look at the name I grew up with. It's not me. I look in the mirror and it's like, it's horrible when you look at a piece of paper and or in your ID and it's like, I'm not that person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that we live in a time now that you can say, please call me by this name.
Yes.
Right. And how wonderful that must feel. Right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I have no real problem with Michelle. I think it would be awesome to be called Madonna, but what are you going to do? I'll just have to learn to live with it.
Oh my goodness. I love you so much. Wow.
Love you too. You're awesome.
I
love you because you're just so real. You're so refreshing to me. I love people who are real. Like, you know what? But not to sound cheesy, but.
Sound cheesy. I love it.
Okay. But I'm one of the things that I'm really big on is sincerity. I think when someone is even remotely disingenuous, like, and you can see it sometimes in, well, I'll give an example of when I was a new yoga teacher, you know, that same thought, I have to be this kind of person.
Mm.
And someone who I really respected, whose studio I wanted to teach at, he came to my class and he took my class and he said, what are three qualities that you really respect about yourself? And I remember the first thing I said is, I'm honest. I said, secondly, I'm my sense of humor. And what was the third thing I said? It'll come to me. But he said, oh yeah. And I said, and direct, you know, I'm a direct communicator. And he said, he goes, yeah, he goes, there are three things I really like about you too. He goes, why didn't I see that when you were teaching?
Oh shit.
And we just had this moment of like, I just got goosebumps right now, right? So we just looked at each other for a moment and he says, that is who you are. And that is what I love about you. And he goes, you are not one of those people who's going to walk around and talk about this. He goes, because that's not you. He goes, you are funny. He goes, you are direct. It's not for everybody. He goes, but you're honest and you're sincere and you're not phony. So show that. And he goes, and the people who are drawn to that will come. People who don't. Art won't. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, what? Yeah, so you like that, eh?
Yeah, that right. Is just like, oh shit. That, okay. I don't know, that hits me.
Good.
You know what I mean?
Does it hit you one more time? Sorry, I had to.
You always bring it back. I love that.
See, people have to understand this. So dear listeners of Paul, Paul and I have danced to a lot of Madonna.
Oh my God. Do you remember?
Yes. We went, it's so funny. It's like, you know, I always remember watching this movie called The First Wives Club and Elizabeth Berkley. Remember? She got, she was like, when she was an actress, she had this, it was like this cutout, and she was in a movie, and it was like the tagline was "Policewoman by day, prostitute by night." Like, it was funny. We were the yoga teachers by day who went and danced to Madonna by night. And we also share quite a bond over, well, so I've Madonna, the Golden Girls, because like, come on, man, the Golden Girls. We can spend a whole hour just doing Golden Girls lines, but.
Well, you can, and I can spend an hour just laughing with you.
That works. I digress. But, and honestly, our hearts, right? We've always had really candid conversations that, you know, some people would be, oh my gosh, they're talking about that. But, you know, I think the thing is when you're willing to share, especially when you've had, when your heart's been hurt, right? And to kind of expose that and I guess you could say the vulnerability that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And, but it, with being able to speak about it with someone who is not only empathetic, but gets it. Yeah. And will not, like, I still remember you and I sitting by a lake, and after, you know, my heart had gone through the ringer, because again, I just kept, even though, you know, everything has its time and its purpose, but I'm like, what did I do wrong? And you're like, girl, enough. This has nothing to do with you. But I think that's the thing.
Furthermore, I'm tired of hearing about it.
And then we talked about you again. And so that was okay.
Well, this is what happens when you get two Leos together. Which one do you talk about? Oh, the cuter one. Just kidding.
Oh, stop. You win. Okay, you're the Blanche. I'm the Sophia.
Yes. Definitely. I can see that.
Hey, I'm not. I'll leave that. Okay. What's next?
What I want to just say real quick about the thing about like when we get together and my experience feels as though when we get together and we have these heart to hearts and we've had our hearts broken and we know what it's like to feel vulnerable. And I always explain sort of one of the pivotal moments in my life, which was I'm using air quotes for those of you that are listening, a relationship that I was in. It was a relationship in my mind, but it's in a relationship in the real world, where I said that he like ripped my heart out of my chest, threw it into a blender, put it on top speed, poured it onto a road, and then drove over it a bunch of times.
Oh, wow.
I felt like that's what happened to me. And, you know, I was 23, 24, 25. It was something. I had just finished college. So I was still a kid going out into the world, you know, it was that moment that then I decided to become a healthy non-smoker. And then it turned into the next thing, next thing, next thing. But that sort of always has been like my major sort of first kind of heart thing, that anything after that, for me, it just became like, okay, I remember this. Okay, I remember this. And then after a while it turned into, okay, but why am I doing this to myself? Because no one else is running the show here. It's me. But my sense is that like you get to a point where you're so familiar with your pain. And when you recognize that in another person, that you're willing to just be open about it and share it. And also for me, it's like, I'm so familiar with my pain and what causes me pain, that I'll go into a situation and be willing to experience it, but do what I need to do to not. Without the masks or the walls. Like I know what's gonna hurt me. I can see this is potential, but I'm gonna walk into it anyway and see how I navigate it so it doesn't. Or, you know, see how I navigate it to transcend or to grow further or what have you. And my experience with you and my I think we have such heart to hearts because I feel, I don't want to say safe, but I feel brave with you because I see that in you. And I know that you have experienced it. And I just know from my experience of you, you won't perpetuate something if you see it causes someone pain. And so that's where that I can be brave with you because I am safe. Do you know what I mean?
I totally do. And there's those similar trajectories, right? That we've both come from, we both felt certain things at different times, but there's also a we've also come out of it in some way,
Yes.
right?
Yeah.
But there's also that about being honest, and I think it's worth saying having a sense of humor about it.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
you know, and that's the thing is, I always, the heart does not age, right? The heart does not age. Getting your heart broken at any age is going to hurt. Now, when I say heartbreak, I think, and this is, you know, it's worth mentioning, it's not just about a person you dated, you know,
right.
No matter how, if it was like a long-term relationship or someone who was only in your life for a matter of days or weeks, irrelevant. It's that
right.
feeling of grief, right? Because let's be honest, it's just a different costume of grief, right?
Yes.
And there's something that's actually what comes to mind is, you know how we have those moments that it's someone who has the courage to be honest with you, who cares about you enough to be honest with you. And there's a dear friend of mine, his name is David, and I've known him for, oh boy, like we've known, he was my high school nemesis.
Ooh.
And I actually tell this story in the book. It's very brief, but him and I were part of the same big group of, a large group of friends. And there was kind of this animosity. And there was something that, you know, he was intelligent, but kind and kind of so kind of, I keep saying kind of, it's like, I feel like a teenager again. Like he was so like at peace in his own skin. And I remember he was the first of my friends to come out, right? And we were in high school, and I just remember saying, oh, that faggot, you know? And I look back, and he knows this now, and it's like, it's so funny. I was so envious of, and that's why when I hear about all these terrible things that go on in the States, and when people just so have such a rejection of something, it's like, where is that really coming from? Because for me, that like in my heart, I was like, yeah, I have a crush on, you know, I had a crush on Kate Winslet, like, okay, since I was after Sense and
in
Sensibility.
Titanic.
And then
I'm like,
yeah, well, he's gay. What? I'm like, in my mind, I was like, wow, you're so brave. But anyway, yeah. He had become, by that point, you know, I was 29, almost 30, and he had become one of the most important friends in my adult life. And after that heartbreak, that was, you know, that one of the other kind of pieces that this, one of the other straws that broke the camel's back that made me go to India, that that prompted me to go to India, was we were sitting, I remember we had had an afternoon of watching Sex in the City and eating some pastries from the Novera bakery around the corner from his apartment. And he looked at me with just this, I don't know. It's hard for me to even find the words, but almost like this sadness that he's like, it's like you've lost your spirit. He goes, how could you let someone have that much power over you?
Ooh.
And he goes, no, he goes, enough of this. And that's where that's that reminder of, I think a lot, Paul, going back to what you were, you know, what you just said before all this is, we look in different ways, you know, some people will go right to the yoga mat and go to, you know, 7 to 10 classes in a week, right? Mm-hmm. Some people will go traveling and do something really adventurous, right? There's different ways to avoid feeling. Right? And I think that's what it came down to is, I just didn't want to feel, right? And
yeah.
So it's like, okay, time to feel this, right? And I think that could be, you know, anyone listening to this who, you know, in your own gut, you don't necessarily need someone to point it out to you. It's kind of like, you know what? It's almost like, you know, let's say you put on a few pounds, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's always that person who feels the need to tell you.
Yep.
Yeah. Hey, I see you put on a few pounds. And it's like, like I didn't notice, right?
Or my even pants worse. Aren't reminding me.
I know. This is what's funny. It's, you know, growing up, like, you know, we're, you know, being on a diet is just like a thing that people do. I just still remember though. And whenever people say, oh, this is the indication. Someone goes, oh, you've lost weight. Right? It's funny how that's become, oh, you've lost weight. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, there was after, you know, twice in my life it happened in particular. Both coincidentally were after heartbreaks. And I just didn't feel like I lost, like I ate barely, but I lost, my appetite. I there wasn't as much joy in anything, and I was just sad. I was like sleeping all the time, right? Totally in a funk. And fine, and there was this one person who kept saying, "Oh, Michelle, you look fantastic. What are you doing? You need to tell me what are you doing?" And I was like, I would smile and be polite and thinking, "You have no idea how much effort it is taking me to even just get out of bed in the morning right now." Right? And I'd smile and like, "Oh," I just brush it off. And then finally one day, like after she said it quite literally, Paul, like every time, every single day she saw me, which was maybe twice a week, I said, "You know, it's called sadness. And it's a diet that I don't recommend."
Damn, that's good.
Yeah. And so the thing is, I always say, like, and I don't believe in telling anyone what to do. Like, I'm a live and let live. Life is a lot easier that way. You know what? I'm going to make mistakes. We're all on our own journey or what have you. But I never, for that reason, I usually don't comment and wait because I don't know if you're sick. I don't know if you're broken heart.
Well, it's interesting because I had an experience back in 2008. I had a flare-up of ulcerative colitis. And before that, I was working out at the gym. I had built muscle. I was close to 150 pounds, which was like my goal because I was 127 in high school. And I remember I didn't even know what was going on at the time, and I was passing off. I was teaching, and I was passing the mic to the next instructor. She goes, "Oh my God, you've just like lost so much weight. Like you're so lucky." And I looked at her, I was like, "I've been shitting blood for the last month. It's not good." And she was like, "Oh, I didn't know." And I'm like, "I get it. And also, you don't need to say anything." So but that's me. That's my fire, right? And I'm learning to not be so reactive with it,
No, you
but
know what, Paul, though, if I may say, because even just after the events of the last week and everything, I think there's, you know what? Truth sometimes is a thick swallow, right? And I think you cannot, you can. I always remember saying, being at someone's apartment years ago when they were in university, and someone had gone to the bathroom. Like they had gone to the bathroom, and there was a can of, there was a can of Wizard in there, right? And so all of a sudden the door opened, and there was just this horrible funk that came out, and someone, because university, everyone's like they're all hammered, and someone yells out and said, "FYI, shit and roses still smells like shit." Talk about wise words. Oh,
Oh,
that was
wiser
funny.
words have never been spoken. I love that. And on that note, we'll leave it right there. Please join us again in a couple days where I will share with you part two of this conversation with Michelle Doyle. In the meantime, check out her links and all the other information that is in the show's notes, and we'll see you again soon.